Hello, this is Adam S. Leslie, co-host of this very podcast. A quick plug before we start, my folk horror novel, Lost in the Garden, is now out and available in all good bookshops, including Blackwell's and Waterstones. And now, back to your regularly scheduled RetroTube.
And welcome to our first anniversary episode of RetroTube, the show where Adam and Heather take it in turns to watch some of the most weird and wonderful television from the 60s to the 80s, and then talk about it for an indeterminate period. Or as long as Adam edits it down to.
Or as long as Adam can hold out without eating biscuits.
Yes. This week it's my turn, and I'm finally taking the opportunity to introduce Adam to one of my all-time favourite cartoons. So pull up a chair, grab a slice of pizza, and come with us to the sewers of New York as we finally get to watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was initially broadcast in the States on the 14th of December 1987 as a five-part miniseries based on the indie Mirage comic book series created by Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman in 1984. The cartoon's success, much like the comic book success, was absolutely unprecedented, and as such, the Turtles has become one of the most successful animated series of all time, with multiple remakes and spin-off films to its credit. The show eventually ran to 10 seasons over 193 episodes and told the adventures of four anthropomorphic turtles, Leonardo the Leader, Donatello the Brainiac, Raphael the Comedian, and Michelangelo the Bon Viveur. Together, they battle a series of rivals, most notably their arch-nemesis Shredder and his cohort from Dimension X, Krang. They are led by their kindly sensei, a giant rat named Splinter, and supported by their BFF, badass lady reporter April O'Neil. I instantly fell in love with the Turtles, and subsequently pizza, as soon as they arrived in the UK in 1990, and I still watch all the different incarnations of the show on an embarrassingly regular basis. But Adam, as you're a smidge older than me, did you ever get to watch the Turtles? Did you have any idea as to what the show would be like, and did you enjoy the episodes we watched today?
Like you say, somewhat older than you. How was it, 8 years?
Yeah, around about that.
Yes, so I would have been 15, I think. Well, I would have been 15 in 1990.
Yes.
So I was already too old for this kind of thing when it came out. So I wouldn't have watched it. But I might have seen it because my brother is 4 years younger than me, I think. So he could well have watched it. I can't really remember exactly what he did watch. But yes, it wasn't a thing that I watched. I was a bit against it, and I'll tell you for why, and it's not the turtles' fault. When I was little, me and all my pals and all my class and everyone I knew my age was really obsessed with Star Wars. We talked about it constantly. We collected the figures. We played Star Wars. Zoe Smith from up the road, she was Princess Leia. She was a bit more bitey than the real Princess Leia. And just everyone was obsessed by Star Wars from in 83, 84. And then around about 85, people started getting interested in Transformers.
Right.
Which is fine.
Robots in disguise.
Robots in disguise, turtle power. It's fine to be interested in something new, but it turned out to be replacing Star Wars, which is a concept I hadn't really come across before.
Well, no, I guess you wouldn't have.
The fact that children have fads.
Honestly, children are so fickle.
So I was wanting to play Star Wars with my friends, and they were like, oh, Star Wars, we're playing Transformers now. And I was thinking, but we like Star Wars.
Aww.
No, now we like Transformers. We don't like Star Wars anymore, we like Transformers. But we like Star Wars. How can you just suddenly all en masse decide that you don't like one thing? And you now like another thing. And this doesn't extend to Peter.
No.
in fairness.
Peter would never
betray me in that fashion.
He wouldn't.
So we were...
He is an angel.
He was probably just as baffled as I was by this sudden treachery. The gimmick seemed quite limited, and of course Star Wars is, you know, the toys are an offshoot, but the main thing is this amazing film that's, you know, it's got a lot of heart and soul and passion behind it, and it's this whole exciting world, whereas Transformers very much was a toy and a really cheap naff-looking cartoon.
Yes, like He-Man.
Like He-Man, essentially. Yeah, it's that sort of thing. So after Transformers, the next one along, all the kids were really obsessed by it was the Teenage Turtles. So I've was always been a bit off with that experience of everyone just turning their back on Star Wars and any of those sort of childhood obsessions that everyone is just fads that everyone is suddenly into. I was a bit against until I just got over myself.
Right. I love the ending of that story. I was not expecting it.
Oh, just grow up, Leslie. Oh. For God's sake. What's wrong with you?
You're 35
years old. It's time to let it go.
As Elsa said.
You can't be furious with the children because they're into Frozen.
Not now. They'll be into now, something else old. Next week. Oh, dear. Oh, I feel like I've brought up some... I feel like I've brought up some really bad memories and, like, you're going to be in therapy now. And I'm so sorry.
So my first encounter, ironically, with the Turtles, the first time I ever heard about them, was in one of Peter's rough books.
Oh, right.
Peter's rough books are a legendary thing. It's not just a rough book. So he would get these books at school, which were intended to be his rough book.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still a thing, a rough book, but it's the book that you know, to put your notes in and you work things out. But Peter just filled his with drawings and these weird stories and these flights of fancy and, you know, one-page comedy sketches and that sort of thing. So there was just this source of fascination for me. But one of his rough books had these illustrations of this really surreal thing that he'd come across, this comic book called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and he was really taken by that being such a sort of Dadaist collection of words. And it's like, this is a really weird thing.
Yes.
These mutant turtles who are also ninjas. So I remember his drawings, he'd drawn them in green biro. Mm. And in typical early teenage Peter style, they were, you know, they looked very fierce and there was blood on their swords and things like that. So it wasn't the sort of cuddly, child-friendly cartoon that it turned out to be. It was more...
No, the comic book was a lot darker, though. And I don't...
Oh, really? Okay.
I haven't personally read any of the comic books, but it has always, the concept of that has always baffled me.
Mm.
That, yeah, the turtles and their ninjas.
Yeah.
And this is really serious.
I've not experienced the comic strip, and I wonder if, like, the deadpan nature of that would be more effective or less effective.
I don't know. Mainly because I am so into and have always been so into all of the different, like, incarnations of the cartoon and the films, which are definitely more oriented towards the whole family rather than just, like, you know, comic book geeks. Which is not a slight on comic book geeks, it's just a type of person. I mean older people than children.
We're the wrong people to be using the word geek as a slur, aren't we, really?
Yes, we embrace our geekery.
Exactly. So, yeah, so like the Bob Nolan, what's his name? Chris Nolan Batman films.
Yes.
Where it's not deadpan, it's just incredibly dark and serious, but he's got little bat ears.
Yes, it's that whole kind of thing. And it
that seems
like
a bit
this.
Silly, but... Yeah, exactly. But I don't know whether the comic book is deadly serious or whether it's just deadpan. And that's part of the charm of it. So the cartoon certainly isn't that.
It's not deadpan at all. It's
very, very silly.
It's very much live pan.
It's very live pan indeed. My one specific memory of it is whichever presenter in the broom cupboard, either Andy Crane or Andy Peters, a little girl had written in, really annoyed because her younger brother, was convinced that it wasn't Turtle Power, it was To The Park.
To The Park.
He was hearing that, and he wanted the broom cupboard presenter to have authority to say definitively, no, it's turtle power. You know what little... Well, you don't know what little brothers are like. I know what little brothers are like. They can be very stubborn. If they get something in their head and you go, no, it's not that, they will stick to it. It's not to the park, it's turtle power. To the park doesn't make any sense. They're not going on the swings. So that stuck in my mind. I think just because it was just such a typical little brother thing.
Yeah, I think they probably stick to things like that because they see how much it's winding you up.
I think
like,
so,
they don't
yeah.
actually care whether it is or not.
I think it is.
But they're getting a rise out of you and they're like, God, this is funny.
It's like when they follow you around everywhere or they just repeat everything you say and it drives you absolutely bonkers.
I can imagine.
Stop repeating everything I say! Stop repeating everything I say! Oh, you're doing it again! You're doing it again! You never clock on to the fact that actually stop saying nothing will stop them doing it.
Quite. Oh, well, never mind.
But anyway, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Yeah, did I enjoy it? Did I enjoy it? Did I enjoy Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? It's difficult to say. There were elements that I thought worked better than others.
Mm.
I wouldn't say it was my favourite of the things you've had me watch so far.
Right. I can understand that.
You know the Anakin and Padme meme doing the rounds at the moment?
Yeah. I do.
And she says, but it's not your least favourite, right? But it's not your least favourite.
Oh, no. Oh, no,
we just
Adam.
Went blank expression.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I mean,
I can't believe I worried about Sweeney. Like, genuine panic
Sweeney was great.
Wasn't worried at all about the turtles, because I was like, God, who doesn't love the turtles? The heroes in a half shell. We've got turtle power.
There were certainly elements of it that I enjoyed.
They're the world's most fearsome fighting team.
They certainly
are. You know,
are.
The heroes in half shell and they're green.
They're also potentially the world's most annoying fighting team.
Oh my God. Now, come on. What? No, you're just... I'm sorry. You're entitled to your very wrong opinion. But you're wrong.
No, I mean... It was a way to spend an hour this afternoon. We watched three episodes, the first three episodes.
It was the first three episodes of the whole thing, yes.
So we got to watch the setup, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah, I thought it would probably be best to watch that because it's kind of quite a complicated backstory, really, because there's like two things going on at once. And I thought it would probably be better if you saw them and that would cut me out having to explain things.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was why I chose those.
It was a lot more comedy than I'd either remembered or imagined. I can't remember which, because I can't remember how much of it I watched at the time, if at all.
Mm.
But I'd sort of had it in my mind that it was more of an action cartoon in the start. I mean, it is an action cartoon, but more in the manner of Transformers or Pole Position or that sort of thing, or any of those ones involving lots of explosions and punching and running about and things... collapsing.
Yes.
But actually, particularly at the start, it was a lot more gag heavy.
So gag heavy. Yes.
I liked the gags.
But occasionally, a crime occurs so baffling that even we city dwellers sit up and take notice. Three scientific equipment companies, three robberies, and what was stolen?
Two positron accelerators, four reverse flux polarity indicators, and one parabolic sine wave generator.
And what does all that equipment do?
I have absolutely no idea.
I like the gags. I like the gag in the first episode. I mean, I like a lot of the gags. But one of the, I think maybe even the actual first gag is a visual gag. And there are vandals in the streets of New York and April O'Neil is reporting about them.
Mm.
It shows some kids graffitiing a wall where a man is just quietly reading a newspaper and minding his own business. And once they've finished graffitiing the wall, he is covered in paint and then he walks away and there's like a little man-shaped space of no graffiti, which did make me giggle.
Yeah. Well, the gag that I wrote down, I mean, I did enjoy all those gags. And I was like, oh, this is a proper comedy show. I hadn't realised. But yeah, the one that I particularly liked, just because I'd not really seen it done anyway, it was quite an original joke, is the bit after a break-in at some kind of warehouse or facility, April O'Neil is interviewing, I think, a scientist or someone about the things that have been stolen.
Oh, yes.
And while she's interviewing him, the security guard is still tied to a chair. Gagged. Yes. And no one's thought to untie him yet.
not one person.
No, know, and he's still going, rrr, rrr, rrr. And I thought that was very funny.
It was. I'm not even going to pretend that I don't love everything about the Turtles, but I see that there are issues with it.
Yeah.
You know, and coming back watching it as a grown-up rather than, you know, seven-year-old me who was like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my whole life. It's even better than the thing that I was in love with last week. I'm probably better than the thing that I'm going to be in love with next week.
Yes.
No, I was properly, I had like coloring books and everything. It was just,
wow.
I wouldn't even play it at school because everybody who was playing it didn't get it right.
Oh no.
And also I think one of the girls who I really didn't like, I can't even remember her name now, but there was a girl who was just like really irritating and she always insisted on being April. And I think that's why I've kind of always had a bit of an issue with April.
I was going to say she's very well cast then, the annoying girl playing April.
Yeah. I didn't, in fact, like the character of April O'Neil at all until the 2012 incarnation of the cartoon, Nickelodeon, where April isn't a reporter. She's just a teenage girl who goes to the local high school, so she's like the same age as the Turtles. Donatello instantly falls in love with her when he sees her, and he says to everyone, there's a similar gag in the episodes that we watched, but Donatello says, she's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. And Raphael goes, she's the only girl you've ever seen, numbnuts. And then obviously Megan Fox became April O'Neil in the 2014 and 2016 live action films. And
she
was amazing. I do love Megan Fox. But no, 80s April, definitely got a big problem with. I think it might be the jumpsuit.
She's quite a tropey journalist.
She is definitely a lady reporter.
She is very much a lady reporter. Should I give some sort of background for anyone unfamiliar with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Go for it.
Although it's one of those shows where the title tells you pretty much all you need to know. It is quite literally Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They are a subterranean crime-fighting quartet of some pet turtles, who are adorable. The baby turtles are the most adorable thing.
They are very cute.
I assume possibly in the original comic book they are unwanted pets that have been flushed down the toilet.
I don't know.
Because that seems to make sense. But in this, a boy is carrying them in a fishbowl, but he falls over and drops them and the fishbowl breaks and they all fall down a grating into the sewers.
Yes.
But I'm imagining it's probably more of a comment on unwanted flushed pets in the original. They become the pets of an exiled Japanese martial arts ninja, I guess. He's a sort of Yoda-like. Speaking of tropey characters, I mean, he's incredibly tropey, the Splinter.
Yes.
Who they encounter some goo and he becomes a giant rat and they become giant teenagers.
Mm.
So these little turtles sort of turn into humans and the human turns into a rat. It's very bizarre. It's a very strange series. And I think it's almost a shame that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a thing is so familiar now, because it was such a big thing and it's such a well-known household name sort of property that you've sort of become accustomed to it as a series of words or as a concept, because it's hard to quite get into one's brain how weird it is.
It is proper wacky.
Yes, it's difficult to sort of come to it afresh because it's so well known.
Mm.
There is also a crime wave being committed by ninjas also, who are the Foot Clan, which just reminded me of Help. Victor Spinetti's character Foot in that. And also Krang reminded me of Clang from that.
Yeah.
So it's probably coincidence. That's the setup, and it's then an excuse for shenanigans. Although unusually, because this is a five-part miniseries, the episodes flow into each other. It's all generally part of the same narrative, whereas the action cartoons would generally be things that can be shown in any order, so they don't have a through arc. Usually, this one does.
Yeah, the whole show does, not just the first series.
Oh really? Okay.
Like an over It's like an overarching. It's not like a. There are quite a few standalone episodes, but there is like a whole overarching theme going through. So yes,
it's very, very, very 80s. It's almost like something that's been made as a spoof of the 80s. It's so 80s, but it's not. It's actually 80s.
It is the most 80s.
Should we launch into the episode itself?
Let's. So episode one was called Turtle Tracks.
Turtle Tracks.
Yeah. You've just basically said what happens in the first episode.
They're quite plot light. They're only 20 minutes.
They are only 20 minutes, and there are, you know, you need to have plenty of room for shenanigans. Do you want to explain any more in this episode, or shall I?
Not really.
Do something. Right, okay.
No, I do have notes.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll go with you because I didn't have the energy to type and make notes.
Oh yes, of course you don't have notes, do you? Yeah,
I have seen all the episodes like 9 million times. Mm.
I've got 3.5 pages of notes, so it's not like I was just watching it drumming my fingers or anything.
Oh no, well that's fine. We'll go with you.
One of the things I thought at the time, and which I haven't really changed my thinking on, is they don't really seem very much like teenagers. I think it's possibly the muscles.
Yeah.
And this isn't very much like the earlier 80s cartoons like He-Man and Thundercats, except for the fact that the four main heroes are incredibly muscular. They're not quite as huge as He-Man.
No, I mean, a few people are.
No, but they are very, very muscular, which doesn't really make them seem like teenagers, and they're not really played by teenagers.
Not played by teenagers at all. One of the voice actors is Cam Clark.
Cam Clark,
he plays Leonardo, and he
Which one's Leonardo again? I'm terrible at...
He's the leader with the blue mask.
Oh, the blue one, right.
The blue one. Cam Clark is probably best known to you and a lot of people as D'Artagnan.
Oh, he's D'Artagnan, right.
Paris, at last I made it. I'm really there. Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? Wonderful. I feel like my life is just beginning.
Yeah, I had a pleasant nap, thanks to that trick sword of yours. Yeah, except I battle for the cause of good.
I have to say, Leonardo does suffer from the leader trope syndrome.
Or doesn't he? Oh.
He is quite the personality vacuum.
Yeah, his personality seems to be killjoy.
Yes, yes. I mean, I try... Because I do love all of the turtles, obviously. I mean, I have a favourite. I don't think I've ever made any secret of it. But I do always...
Is it the purple one?
No.
Oh, is it? Oh, which one's your favourite?
Raphael.
Is that the red one?
Yeah. The one
right.
who constantly
Oh, okay, you like
jokes.
The sarcastic one. Right.
Yeah, imagine that, me liking the sarcastic one.
You're not human!
Bingo. Yeah, we're dealing with a real mind here.
Yeah, I've always tried to like Leonardo because he's the leader.
Of course.
You know, they're all like best friends and they, you know, the others like him. But just, he's always been a bit...
I'm not doing a thing till we eat some serious breakfast.
And we don't eat until we practice.
Casting D'Artagnan as the boring leader is a bit like casting Shaggy from Scooby-Doo as the boring leader, as we found out when we did Battle of the Planets.
Quite.
You've always got to have your Mark character.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I made plenty of notes on... Well, this is the thing as well. When I saw it or was aware of it originally, I was aware of the fact that they were supposed to have different personalities.
Mm.
But they just seemed like a bunch of interchangeable surfer dudes going, yo, dude, bodacious, yo, pizza. But this time, obviously, because... I'm having to watch it critically, I did make an actual effort to distinguish the different personalities of the turtles. It's a bit subtle, but I think I did. There's the sarcastic one, and then sort of the flippant kind of partying one, and then the slightly nerdy one, and then... Is there a fourth one? I forget.
Yeah, there is a fourth one. But, yeah, he's the one who's none of the others.
Yeah, he gets no jokes. Poor Cam Clark, he gets no jokes at all.
Not one joke.
Juliet! That was a bad impression, wasn't it?
It wasn't great. all of the personalities have kind of evolved over the years. So now Leonardo is actually more a kind of a more of a just a big geek.
Okay.
Donatello is way more into science and technology and that, and he's total nerd like that.
He's the Mickey Dolenz.
Raphael is really, really grumpy.
Oh, really?
So grumpy. He's the grumpiest. And Michelangelo has gone from just being like a surfer dude obsessed with pizza to being one of nature's special people.
I think in this they want to infer he's a bit of a stoner without actually being able to say it.
Yeah, I mean, he does have the voice.
Happy birthday to moi. Happy birthday, dear Michelangelo. Happy birthday to yours truly. Hey, dudes, I brought you a special treat in honor of a totally special day. You see, today just happens to be my...
Thanks, Michelangelo.
Great chow.
I agree wholeheartedly.
But didn't you guys notice anything special about that pizza?
But the very last moment in the third episode, they're like, oh, you've been eating too much pizza again.
You know what I saw in that old house? It was this humongous brain. And it had a mouth and eyes, and it talked to me.
A talking brain, huh?
Yeah. Weird, huh?
Michelangelo, I do believe you finally had one pizza too many.
Are you out of your box, is what they are saying.
Have you been at the marijuana pizza?
Yes.
So, yeah, I got the hang of the different characters, I think, but it is subtle.
It is a lot more subtle in the original series, I will agree. I find it especially difficult in the original films, because they made three live-action films, and the personalities are similarly, I mean, not interchangeable, but not especially distinct.
Yeah.
And worse than that, the shade of red and the shade of orange are quite similar, and the shade of blue and the shade of purple are quite similar. So... So it's really tricky if you're trying to figure it out. I mean, in the 1984 comic book, they all had red bandanas.
Oof.
So, yeah, that's even more tricky.
Throws a bone.
If you like. We meet them because they rescue April, who has been chased into the sewers by some baddies.
That's quite a trope in itself, is that a vulnerable character being cornered by a group of villains, we think it's the end of them, but then the heroes with their special skills come in and give them a good creaming.
Yes, they do.
They biff them on the nose.
They biff them on the nose. There's a big board that goes up saying biff. Anyway, they are in the shadows because they're ninjas, obviously. And when they've chased the baddies off, and April's like, oh, thank you so much for saving me. Who are you? And they walk into the light and she sees that they're turtles. And she promptly faints. Nobody's impressed by this.
She says, you're turtles, and then Red Turtle says, oh, I'm being Raphael. Sarcastic now. Yeah, he says, oh, so you're clever then.
No, and we're dealing with the down. Real mind here.
Exactly, and he said, he does this repeatedly when she's just a bit traumatised about this, and he's just repeatedly sarcastic, so I've written down that Red Turtle is unpleasantly sarcastic. I didn't like him at first.
He's crude but cool.
Well,
give me a break.
Give me a break.
I'm just reeling from the negativity about Raphael. He's clearly the best.
I mean, I think he improved. I just found him a bit cruel. Don't be like that, Raphael. Come on, play the game.
Then when she woke up, Splinter offered her a brew. He said, Here, love,
have a brew.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said in that exact accent. And she fainted again, and Raphael was like, ugh, I hate it when she does that. As soon as, like, you know, she got conscious and stayed conscious for a while, I think they were all right. He ends up being the one who reminds the other, because there is a scene later on in the episode where the building they're all in gets flooded, and it gets cartoon flooded, so it gets flooded it up does. To the ceiling. Donatello's like, oh, it's fine, we can breathe. And Raphael's the one who says, yeah, we can breathe, but she can't. So he does take care of her. He's just as so. I think he's a bit less cruel than you're giving him credit for.
Well, this was my note. I mean, I did warm to him as it went along, but my initially one gag that I remember laughing out loud at.
Mm.
An actual LOL emitted from my mouth.
Wow.
It was just a cutaway of somebody being mugged, and he threw his hands up in the air, and the ice cream cone that he was holding landed upside down exactly on top of his head.
Oh, yeah, it went onto his head.
And I just thought that was very funny.
That was very funny.
Just
that
somebody with an ice cream cone upside down on their head. That's just a funny thing.
That's never not funny. Splinter tells her their backstory, which is very complicated. The main takeaway is that Splinter has got a rival in Japan. He thinks he is the reason that Splinter is in New York in the first place. And it's very important that we know about him, because it turns out that he has now become the Shredder, the evil, evil bad guy.
Again, it's a name you get used to, but he, as they point out, he's named after a piece of office equipment, which again is,
yes,
sort of...
he is.
I think that the show is sort of balanced between being a bit spoofy, but also being what it is, if that makes sense. So it's sort of balanced between being spoofy and being sincere.
Yeah.
And not quite landing on either one. I kind of... I was wanting to lean a bit more into the spoofy arch kind of meta thing.
It definitely gets there.
Little moments like the main baddie being called the Shredder, and you're just reminded of office equipment, or things like they end up going to a ninja district in the city that April seemed unaware of, just where everyone's ninjas and everything's ninja themed. That was quite funny.
Ninja dentist was the, yes, was the one that really terrified them all.
Should I tell you what the humour reminded me of?
Go on.
And I mean this in a good way. This, I don't mean this in a derogatory way. It reminded me of Tiny Toon Adventures.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That very sort of self-referential meta kind of humour.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
And I was kind of wanting more of, yeah, to lean more into that.
I mean, obviously, because the first sort of five episodes are basically setting up the world, there's not so much of that, but there is an awful lot more of it as the seasons go on.
Right.
There's a full-on Batman spoof episode where Donatello becomes a Batman-type character, and one of the other turtles... feel that it's Raphael, says something very, very Batman related, and Michelangelo says, "You probably shouldn't say that, man, because we'll get a lawsuit."
That's very Tiny Toons, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot more of that as the seasons go on. But in these first few episodes, it is trying to sort of balance the... this is a really funny show, but also we've got quite a big bit of story to tell.
I just want to skip back a bit to the flashbacks, the setup in Japan and things. There was one moment where it was quite OMG, but then it wasn't.
Yes.
Do you know the bit I mean?
I don't know if we're thinking of the same thing. You say what you're thinking of.
It's the bit where the guy who's sort of... I'm assuming he's... I slightly lost track of what was going on, but I'm assuming he's the guy who turns out to be the Shredder later.
Mm.
When he pulls out a knife and apparently thrusts it into the back of the guy sitting next to him. And I was like, "Oh, he's just stabbed someone in the back. That's a bit unexpected." But actually, he's just pinned his clothing to the wall so that he can't bow to the sensei when he comes in, and he's all disgraced for that reason. The sensei, the guy who's been pinned to the wall, can't say, "Oh, but there's a knife sticking in my clothing." But yeah, I don't know if that was deliberate, where you're supposed to think that he's knifed him in the back and then it turns out he hasn't. But just for a moment I thought, "Oh, this has gone a bit dark."
Ooh, crikey.
Ooh.
The thing I was really quite shocked at, because watching things for yourself is one thing, because like you've got things that you can turn off in your mind because you know that it's an of its time thing.
Yeah.
And I know you should never really excuse things for being of its time, but what are you going to do? You can't write and say, "Can you please reanimate this?" Yeah. There's an awful lot of battle picking, and it's not my place to pick particular battles. But the animation of the Japanese characters was...
oh, yes.
Horrendous. And I hadn't even seen... I had no recollection of it being like that before, but I was genuinely shocked when I watched it back this particular time. It's not even like I'd seen it and been like, "Oh yes, that's particularly racist drawing there. Oh well, it's all right." I just hadn't... it just hadn't even registered.
The Japanese characters are quite...
oh,
tropey.
My god, they are so tropey.
Like at one point, Splinter says, "We are about to join our ancestors," which is the most like tropey Japanese thing you could possibly say in that situation.
So you plot to kill our honorable sensei.
Disgraceful. For this misdeed you should be banished from the Foot Clan altogether.
What say you, all-wise sensei?
Oh, okay. I say, throw the bomb out!
I was surprised, actually, by how ugly, and I don't know if this goes on, but certainly in the first couple of episodes, quite how ugly a lot of the character design was.
Oh, yeah, no, that carries on. Ugly characters.
The muggers are absolutely grotesque.
And they're meant to be.
But, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the Japanese characters are utterly grotesque. Although, when Shredder hasn't got his mask on, he's very good-looking.
Bizarrely, yes.
Yeah, it's essentially April O'Neil and Shredder who are the only good-looking characters in it. And everyone else is like utterly grotesque caricatures.
I don't know why I had it in my head that he wore the mask because he like had loads of scarring on his face. I don't know why that.
It's always usually ended up the way, being in isn't my it? Head.
But yeah, but he's not. He's just got a face.
He's distractingly handsome. That's why he has to wear it.
Yes,
no one can concentrate.
Otherwise,
like,
I'd just say, here comes the smolder. and I'd just, you know, seduce everybody very quickly is what his real motivation is there.
I hadn't realised before quite how small the turtles are, because I'd assume they were pretty much adult size, but they're not. They're little. And thus
they're little, like, oh, I don't know, teenagers.
Yeah, some teenagers are bigger than I am. Depends. What are they supposed to be, like 13-year-olds? Are they 19?
No, I think meant to be more like 15.
Oh, okay.
That's usually the sort of age it starts off at.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't know how big an anthropomorphized turtle would become either. It reminded me of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, but with four of them.
Snow White and the Four Turtles.
Yeah, exactly. This sort of, she's not exiled, but, you know, this adrift woman who's living with these strange small people.
Yeah.
With their differing personalities.
I mean, she's not living with them by any means, but she does end up staying with them for a little while they get this whole who are the evil ninjas mystery solved.
Yeah, she doesn't have a bath for or change her clothes, I think, for 5 days.
And during all that time, she's living in a sewer. So
yes, it probably doesn't make a difference.
Oh, she must hum by the time she gets home. Absolutely. When she says to Splinter that she's going to go home and girl up. She's not going to go home and girl up. She's going to go home and get a bath, like a human.
Yeah, human up. Another note was that their feet were freaking me out.
Oh, the two toes.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
You did not.
It was bothering me.
Yeah, turtles have got weird feet. Sorry, it's just true. They do.
If they'd had turtle feet, that would be fine. If they like were webbed for swimming.
Yeah.
But they were sort of weird human feet, but with these two. Oh no, it was awful. I'm having flashbacks.
For some reason, they have three in the 2012 series.
Oh, that's a bit better. The two, there's just
two's just weird.
There's such a big gap in the middle,
and they only have three fingers.
Yeah,
I don't quite know how they maintain grip on the sai or the katanas, but they do because there's not actually a whole lot of ninjuring going on. There's not a whole lot of actually using any of their weapons for fighting because it's a kid's show. They just kind of like use them to like make fire hydrants spurt water all over the baddies.
Yes.
You know, they use them as tools rather than weapons.
In the first episode, there is a huge horde of robot ninja security guards. So they were able to destroy them with impunity and have a bit more ninja-style fun with them.
Yeah, there was that. And also in the third episode, there are more little robot-y things called mousers. The mousers are invented by a scientist named Baxter Stockman, who just really wants to make some money off inventing something. He's not a goodie by any stretch of the imagination, but
no, not at
he's
all.
Not really an evil baddie, and he gets recruited by the Shredder to bulk make these mousers so that Shredder can.
So these robots that will hunt down, they'll pursue to the extent that they will chew through walls in order to catch mice, which makes me think that they're probably more destructive than the actual mice that they're being built to catch.
Yeah.
They will just relentlessly chew through everything. Am I allowed to say that I found the pizza thing quite annoying?
I can see why you would find the pizza thing quite annoying. Yeah, that's fine.
I think it was just, I mean, it's quite a good gag the first couple of times. I think it was a little bit overplayed.
Yeah.
There's a There's an exchange later that I wrote down where April says, "Do you guys take anything seriously?" And then one of the turtles says, "Of course we do." And I thought, I bet it's pizza. And then it cuts to them eating pizza, and she says, "I should have guessed." And I did guess.
Any sign of Shredder? I just know he's here somewhere.
Yeah, I can practically smell him.
I smell something better. Pizzas!
I seem to remember, I don't know if it's because I was growing up in small inbred village Lancashire, but pizza wasn't really a thing before the turtles.
No, I remember that. Certainly during the 80s, we didn't really eat pizza. It felt much more of a London yuppie thing.
Yeah.
It was the kind of thing that was mentioned in Douglas Adams' book.
Yeah, it was like posh people had pizza. They did kind of turn pizza into a thing over here. Definitely.
Oh.
I remember seeing pizza in like the freezer section in a supermarket with a picture of Leonardo on the front.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
What a marketing tool.
I do. And I was like, oh, Mum, that must be the actual pizzas that the turtles eat.
Can we get some?
Can we get some? And she was like, no, it's just a picture of a turtle on front. It's just a normal everyday pizza. And I was like, yeah, but like, pizzas are dead posh, man. turns out they're not at all.
As a disclaimer, so we don't get angry emails, I've nothing against pizza. I love pizza.
No, it is my favourite food.
It's certainly up there with me. I mean, it's difficult to choose because I'm incredibly greedy.
You're not greedy. You're just accommodating.
I'm very accommodating. This is true. I shall use that next time. Somebody tells me I'm very greedy. No, I'm just accommodating.
That's right. You are. So yeah, I do agree that like out of context now, it's like ugh, pizza schmizza. Will you please get over it and tell a different joke? I get that, but at the time, it was like, it felt like a whole new thing. So it felt like that level of joke repetition did belong in the show. So, yeah. Although, I do agree watching it back, it's like, oh, for God's sake, we get it, man. You like a pizza with a dodgy topping.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And an allusion I would make would be in Doctor Who, the later Tom Baker Doctor Who's, he would occasionally, once or twice a story, offer somebody a jelly baby out of a bag out of his pocket. Would you like a jelly baby? Mm. But it'd be a bit like, you know, every two or three minutes he'd just bring up jelly babies.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do, Doctor? Well, I'd rather like to eat a jelly baby now. And just like, all right, we get it. You like jelly babies.
100% that kind of thing. Yeah.
At the time, as somebody who wasn't very familiar with pizza, did all their toppings strike you as weird toppings, or did you take that as a thing that just one has on pizza? Ice cream and anchovies.
No, they were always weird. Ice cream and anchovies. I didn't know what an anchovy was.
No.
So I had to ask, and then when Mum was like, it's like a little fish, I was like, ew, that's weird. But then that was because they're turtles, and turtles don't have the same kind of taste buds as a human would
this
have.
This is so true,
It would again make sense from their perspective to have wacky toppings like banana and sausage.
Pizza, I think, bearing in mind, of course, when I was growing up in the 80s, I was quite snobby. And I hadn't really had pizza before. And pizza for me was a bit like bowling, the game of bowling, or the night out, the activity of bowling. Bowling was always, like, we should go bowling. It's like, you're just rolling a ball towards some Skittles. Why is that fun? And then when I actually did it, it's like, oh no, this is fun. I'm enjoying this. But it's just sort of like the concept of it seems quite dry. It's like, why would I want to go and do that for 2 hours? Just roll a heavy ball repeatedly towards some Skittles. And then when you do it, you think, no, this is enjoyable. But it's the same with pizza. It's like a big circle of quite dry bread with some tomato paste on it and cheese. Why is that going to be tasty? That sounds really boring.
Yeah.
And then when you have some,
and then
you go, oh my God, this is amazing.
Exactly.
Why was I being so snobby?
I mean, I hate to go back to the 2012 version, but to be fair, it is my favourite out of all of the incarnations. In the first episode, they find an abandoned pizza on a rooftop, and they open it, and because up until this point, they'd been living in the sewers and hadn't gone outside before. So they would only eat worms and algae. And they saw this pizza, and they opened the box and they were like, I don't know what it is. Michelangelo takes a slice and sniffs it and is like, could be puppy food, and he takes a bite, and he just, and it just, there's like a cutaway of his brain, and it just explodes.
I think that's a bit like my experience with pizza.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
Well, my next note is that the end theme makes me think it's nearly dinner, just because it's quite nostalgic for it being on children's BBC, and I'm thinking of Andy Crane saying, and there'll be more from Splinter and the Turtles at the same time next week. Next door, mince and tatties are cooking.
Nice.
The smell's drifting through, and it's nearly time, and Dad's nearly due home from work.
Oh.
So it's a little bit of a nostalgia pang.
It's quite nostalgic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My final note for episode one was that I liked the comedy more than the action, that it didn't quite have the resources to pull the action off. It's quite a cheaply animated cartoon.
It is.
Which is no slight against it, because I like Doctor Who. One has to work with the budget one has. You can't make a lavishly animated cartoon if you only have the budget for a cheaply animated cartoon.
As everybody knows, it wasn't released as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles over here. It was released as Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
I was going to say, people will be furious with us if we don't mention that.
Yes, it was a deliberate thing. It's fine. We don't need to refer to it as hero anymore. We're allowed to say the word ninja.
Were they worried that the British school kids would become Japanese assassins? It's a weird choice, isn't it?
they were very worried about that and all of the levels of violence that made. In fact, they were so worried that, I mean, I know we've said that the levels of action are not as we would like, to the extent that even though Leonardo and Raphael both have blades, which are, you know, very easy to murder people with.
Yes.
The big problem everybody had was Michelangelo and the nunchucks.
I remember that, yes. Yeah, they were much more worried about the nunchucks.
They thought they were the most violent things ever. I mean, to be honest, have you seen Michelangelo? It's an absolute wonder. He hasn't given himself 12 black eyes in the course of the first week's training. So, yeah, that was the main issue with the nunchucks in the UK release, possibly the European release in general. All references to Michelangelo using nunchucks was edited out.
Oh, really? That must have been baffling.
To the extent that from series 4 onwards, because obviously the Turtles have been a going concern in America without any problems for like 3 series before it came over to Europe. So from series 4 onwards, they got rid of the nunchucks altogether and replaced it with like a grappling hook, because that's obviously a lot more safe.
I think when you look back on a lot of these things that caused a big stir at the time, it's often difficult to see what the fuss is.
Yeah, like jazz.
Exactly, like jazz and bebop and all that sort of thing. And I think there's a lot of just this idea that anything that the kids are getting into in a big way is somehow harmful and dangerous.
Yeah.
And yeah, this idea that, like, you know, when everyone was into yo-yos, there's a big scare that it's going to give everyone wrist sprain. Or that, you know, that sort of ridiculous thing. And just cooking up any reason to be alarmed and outraged by anything that kids are into.
Everybody loves being scandalised.
Yes, and it's just some kind of tabloid froth that's been kicked up.
What can I clutch my pearls over today?
Exactly. They're into hula hoops. Oh no, that means, oh, that's just very sexual. Oh,
all
that hip swaying.
And
it's
also
get
they might accidentally
pregnant.
Strangle themselves.
Yes. So, episode 2... Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage in a Harsh Shell. Episode 2 starts with the turtles not wearing their headbands. And it's very strange seeing them without their headbands. They look like puddings.
Isn't it? They do.
You'd not take them seriously if you saw them coming without their little eye masks on. They just they look so ridiculous and sort of adorable.
They do look adorable.
I urge anyone to Google an image of the turtles without their eye masks on.
Yeah, do it. And then please get in touch and let us know what you think of a maskless turtle.
Mm-hmm. Let us know which pudding you think they look like.
Yes, please do. Oh, God. Yeah. I like the fact that they just take their masks off to go to bed, but the little wristband things stay on.
Mm-hmm. It's unhygienic to wear your mask in bed, I think.
I wouldn't know.
Maybe their mums told them that if they wore their masks to bed, they'd get strangled.
Yeah. She was probably horrified by the concept.
You'll get strangled in your sleep.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. Exactly what happened.
And don't let Splinter sleep in the room with you, because he'll sit on your face during the night and you'll suffocate.
This has gone so weird. Am I awake? Oh, God. Yeah, that was that was the entire worry of a whole generation sleeping in masks.
Yeah.
And having a giant rat suffocate you in your sleep. Yeah. So they do wake up eventually, and they have breakfast, and they have breakfast cereal on pizza.
Well, before they have breakfast, this is where I made my first note about the blue turtle being a boring leader. Because one of them says, "I'm starving," and blue turtle says, "And we don't eat until we've practiced."
Oh, I know.
Like, oh, can you just give it a rest?
Oh,
have a day off, blue turtle.
Blue turtle. I love that you don't use the names. You just use their colours as their names. Blue turtle.
I can't quite remember which is which. They're all named after very similar things, so the names get quite jumbled up in my mind as to which one's which. Donatello, I feel, should be the blue one, because that's more of a blue word.
Yeah.
Raphael works as the red one, because that's a red word.
Yeah, it is. And Michelangelo works as orange.
Yeah, I'd say that works. At one point, I forgot to write down which character it was, but somebody says, "I don't believe it." But the line reading was, "I don't believe it."
I remember that.
Yeah, I'll have to drop the audio in.
"I don't believe it. My mighty foot soldiers beaten by a bunch of turtles."
Maybe it was actual Victor Meldrew.
It could have been. Then there's a brain thing. I wrote, ooh, brain thing.
Yes, Krang.
Who says things like, "My legions are waiting in Dimension X." And he is... Krang is great. I like Krang.
Evil. He's evil.
He's quite evil, but he's hilarious. He's basically a naked exposed brain with tendrils. He's got a mouth and eyes, and then these tendrils that he sort of flexes as well. He's talking like he's a strong man showing off his muscles.
He only wants one thing in his life: the poor little love.
And thank God it's not pizza. Oh my goodness!
It's not pizza. He just wants a body.
He wants a body. Yeah.
He just wants a body. He's a brain without a body. He just wants a body. We've all been there.
Ah, suck my old shred.
I told you, call me the Shredder.
You wouldn't be shredding anything if it weren't for me. I have given you vast technical knowledge, but you have not fulfilled your half of the bargain. My legions are waiting in Dimension X to storm into this world and crush it. All I lack is a body. A body which you have failed to provide for me."
But yes, I liked Krang. He was entertaining.
Yeah, I like the fact that although him and the Shredder are in cahoots to a degree,
yeah,
Krang doesn't really like Shredder very much. He's not really interested in Shredder or Shredder's problems or the turtles or anything. He just wants a body and he wants to take over Earth. Mm. He's not interested in anything else. Everything else is quite irritating to him, especially Shredder.
I feel also that most of the characters are quite generic. So Shredder is a very generic, "Why am I surrounded by fools?" sort of character.
Yes, he very much is.
Shredder and Splinter their names are so similar, I always have to make a conscious effort to remember which one's which. Splinter is a very generic Japanese sensei, and April O'Neil's a very generic woman reporter character, feisty reporter character. But Krang is quite sufficiently bizarre, so I sort of took to him. There's a bit where April, for some reason, I can't remember why, finds three of the turtles in disguise. I don't know why the boring blue one wasn't in disguise, but the other three are
because
in disguise.
Because he's boring.
Because he's boring. He refuses to put on a disguise because it would undermine his authority, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And they shout out, "Hey girl, what's the haps?"
Yeah, and one of them's
which
doing
is
moonwalk.
The most 80s phrase. April isn't remotely impressed. She's
no.
like, "What the bleeding hell are you doing here? Get out. Go home. Show me up."
I would have liked April much more if she spoke like that. What the bleeding hell are you doing here?
I should be April.
You should.
You come over here with your pizza.
Yeah. You have to be held back from headbutting them like Bobby Ball.
I don't think I'd ever headbutt a turtle. I mean, you know,
filling
how
up, Tommy.
Cruelty in the first place.
As I think is possibly a legal requirement, Shredder is the faux convivial villain. Because all villains are faux convivial, aren't they? You can't have a rude villain. You have to have a very polite villain. And he does say, "I must congratulate you. How nice of you to join me." Has there ever been like a top villain who wasn't faux convivial?
No. It's the rules.
"How nice of you to join me, Mr. Bond. I must congratulate you for defeating my men so easily."
I mean, I think the Emperor is like potentially the only one who's just outright terrifying the whole time. He doesn't, like, he has zero chill, even like pretend chill. He's just always like, "Join the dark side. Go on. Join it. Join the dark side. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. You're getting angry, aren't you? Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do
He's
it."
He's still quite mockingly. He has that sort of mocking politeness. "So I'm afraid the deflector shield will be quite operational, Margaret."
Is that his like pet name for Darth Vader? Or?
He has the slight Scottish accent like Victor Meldrew. This episode contains possibly the worst sick burn ever. When the turtles are being attacked by Bebop and Rocksteady, one of them says, "Didn't I see you in the Jungle Book?"
Yes!
Which, A, coming from a mutant turtle, is a bit ripe.
I would love it if you had been the voice of either Bebop or Rocksteady and after having heard, "Did I see you in the Jungle Book?" You just turned around.
It's like you're trying to insult me with
"Excuse
Kipling references.
You?"
Yeah, B, it's far too literary to make a decent insult. "Didn't I see you in the poem If?"
I hate to break this to you, Adam. They did make a film out of the Jungle Book.
Well, it's quite a highbrow cartoon, and he's basically saying, "You're an animal," and he's an animal who's saying it. It doesn't really make sense as an insult.
It doesn't land.
My final note for episode 2 is just a general note that I think the most 80s type of humour that is possible is cracking wise. And I think it's sort of a shame that after the first episode, which is a lot more arch and a bit deconstructionist and meta. A lot of the humour in the second episode is just cracking wise, constant cracking wise, but times three. Normally in these cartoons you'll have one wise cracking character, but it's three constantly. Everything they see they have to make some smart remark about. It's like being trapped in a room with three Deadpools. I only know him from the first film. That's my only interaction with Deadpool, was the Ryan Reynolds film.
I read comic books. And I love Deadpool in the comic books, and I didn't like Deadpool in the film.
Yeah, his thing was just constantly wisecracking, and like every action beat in this, one of the turtles has to make some kind of remark. I'm tempted almost to do a supercut of just all their wisecracks.
I think you should.
Long,
I would love that.
Unbroken stream of smart aleckery.
"Oh man, that was a short trip.
I hate it when he says that.
get the feeling somebody has it in for us?
Well, that's kind of a defeatist attitude, don't you think?
Well, I feel like a marshmallow in Nutcracker.
Take your time, why don't you? Lights out!
So long, guys! Hey, write us when you hit bottom!
Yeah, we were trained to fight people, not can openers.
Rude, dude.
Our rear flank's cut off, Sarge. I'd say we redecorated the place nicely. A kitchen utensil? Does the phrase, go suck a lemon, hold any meaning for you?
The mutation didn't up their IQs any.
Come on, Splinter, we're checking out of this dump. I really wish you'd stop saying things like that. Didn't I see you in the Jungle Book?
Yeah, those jerks belong in a zoo, not the streets.
Now you boys have fun together, and we'll be back to check on you in about 10 years.
Dumb, dumb, dumb! Those dudes are so dumb!
This is not my idea of a good time.
Episode 3. April has been wearing the same clothes for days. She also proves what a lousy journalist she is when they find out that... So this is where we get to the little robots that are called the Mousers that are being mass-produced in order to hunt down Splinter and the Turtles. And the name of the inventor is stamped on the bottom of the feet of these things. And it's Baxter Stockman. So they say, oh, April, well, she's a journalist. She'll be able to find out who and where Baxter Stockman is. So they go to her and say, his name is Baxter Stockman. And she says...
That's all you've got to go on? A name?
I'd say a name is pretty good. Particularly a name like Baxter Stockman.
It's not like it's a name like John Smith.
No. And sure enough, she finds him in three clicks on... Somehow, in 1987, she Googles him, apparently. She's on the computer anyway, and she finds...
Magically
finds Baxter Stockman, so I don't know what her problem was, frankly. She's just annoying me now.
She just had one on it.
I think I liked this episode least just because they had the robot ninja security guards and the turtles defeated them easily, and so Shredder's new idea is to come up with these robot vermin control, and I kind of thought, oh, I wonder if the turtles will defeat them easily, and they didn't.
Lo and behold,
so it's like, oh, okay.
In between times, the turtles have said, do you know what, Master Splinter, you're probably best off going to stay with April for a little bit. She'll look after you. She won't mind. So poor old April... She's just got out of the bath. She's like, oh, thank God I don't smell of sewers anymore.
She has to look after an enormous 6-foot rat.
Which, fair play to her, all credit. She puts him in her bed.
I know. She's thinking, there's a human-sized rat in my bed, sleeping there. Although, when they're on the way to see Shredder, like the three, the orange, red and purple turtles are cracking wise... And Blue Turtle says, stick to business, that the only thing worse than compulsive wisecrackers is the nag. The joyless, humourless nag.
Yeah, that's right. They're all making jokes and Leonardo's jealous because he's not making any jokes.
April sure was mad.
Oh well, you know women.
No, we don't. She's the first one we ever met.
Stick to business.
Are they brothers?
Yes.
What's their surname?
Hamato.
What?
Hamato. Because Splinter's real name is Hamato Yoshi.
Ah, okay.
In Japan, obviously, they have the surname first and then the first name. So, yeah.
What's Hamato with you?
I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen.
Took a while, though.
It's still hilarious. Oh, no.
Well, that was the Turtles, then.
That was the Turtles. I'm going to ask you the questions.
Please do.
Who was your favourite and least favourite character?
Well, my favourite character is Krang.
That's fair.
Because he's quite funny and strange and, yeah, not quite as generic as many of the other characters.
Have you got a least favourite?
I'm afraid I do. You're not going to like it, though.
Oh, no.
Just the turtles, generally.
The turtles, generally?
Yes. They themselves were actually quite... Particularly that scene when they're causing chaos in April O'Neil's flat, when she tells them not to. They're physically quite endearing, like the way they act. I just don't like their 80s surfer dude voices particularly. I think they would be... If they had more of like... Just different voices, if they were a bit more like uni or... like a character from a Miyazaki cartoon or that kind of thing. If they were a bit more weird and less, hey, dude, whoa, cowabunga, whoa, no way, dude, kind of thing, I'd find them a bit more likable. I think that has always been my essential problem with the Turtles, is their voices. And you're never going to talk to me again.
Oh my god.
Starting from now. Well, that was Retrotube.
That was. It's been quite an eventful year.
Yeah, we made it to exactly 1 year. It's been quite
an eventful friendship. But no, it's all over now. In fact, while you stepped away from the microphone for a few minutes while we were recording, I texted Joe and I said, Adam hates the Turtles. She texted back saying, and I quote, break friends with him immediately.
I'll be more specific then. Blue Turtle.
Blue Turtle, that's fine.
Yeah. The other three were fine.
That's fair. That is 100% fair. I think Leonardo's my worst character as well. I think the Turtles is your Battle of the Planets for me.
I think so,
If that makes sense.
No, definitely.
Yeah, so it's like, you loved it and that's fine and everything, but it didn't mean anything to me. I think a lot of loving any cartoon, especially one that you've grown up with, is the fact that you've grown up with it. And
definitely watching Battle of the Planets again, particularly with a critical eye, it wasn't very good. And like, I think Dungeons and Dragons, I think we established this, Dungeons and Dragons actually was good.
Yeah.
And of course,
Dragons was really good.
The one we watched for our unreleased pilot episode, Dogtanian.
Yeah.
It's a genuinely good cartoon, but I think possibly some of the others, you had to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that the Turtles is that for a lot of people who are my age-ish, maybe a little older, a little younger.
It's similar to Thundercats that at the time, I haven't watched it since, but at the time I was probably 13 or 14 when it was on, and I didn't like it.
I was like 5 or 6 and I watched it quite religiously. And I wanted to beat Chitara.
It's held in real high esteem now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And like I've seen a few episodes, like maybe a couple of years ago, and it's probably less great than I remember it.
Yeah.
Lion-O is definitely of the leader trope.
Yes.
Total personality vacuum.
It was very declamatory. I remember it being very.
Yes, it was. It
they
was.
Didn't seem like real people. They see. They talked like this a lot, and yeah. Just declaimed constantly.
Yeah, it was
constantly.
Very, very, very Shakespearean. So, yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
We're lies, we're cries, but we're loving the night away. We buy surprise, the night just passed away.
So thank you very, very much for sitting yourself through 3 episodes of a show that you clearly hated. I love you so much for it. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who listened in. It's been an amazing year of television. And hopefully the next year we can watch even more exciting stuff. Starting with our next episode, can you give us a clue of what you have chosen for next time, Adam?
Well, if it's the planned one, but it might not be, it's going to be something a bit experimental and different next time, if that works out. But I won't say any more than that, because it might turn out to be something completely different. But it may be a one-off change of format.
So, yes, if you would like to get in touch with us, you're more than welcome to. We love hearing from you. It's like our favourite thing. Our Twitter account is @retro_tube and our email address is retrotubepodcast@gmail.com. Always happy to hear from you, and we don't really have a lot more to say about that. So that is absolutely everything I have got to say on the matter. Adam, do you have the final word?
I mean, it would be remiss of me not to say cowabunga as the final word on the Turtles episode, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Cowabunga!
Hello everybody, it's me again. This is being recorded after the main show has been recorded, because I've just had a little chat with Adam and he thinks we probably ought to add this little bit to it. So I'm going to tell you about it now. My dad, as long-time followers of this podcast will know, was a really groovy guy. And he was also a really, really sentimental old sod. And he kept pretty much all of my school books from when I was little. I mean, there was probably no point in keeping the maths books apart from, you know, for the comedy value. But most interestingly, he kept my stories and poems book back from when I was about 7 years old. So like maybe year three at primary school. So it was from about 1990. And it turns out that I have always been something of an incurable fangirl. We were asked to write a story about whatever it was that we wanted, and so I decided that I would write a story about my favourite TV show of the time, which was obviously the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. It definitely counts, I think, as my very first ever fanfic. And even though it was, you know, a seven-year-old, crappy little bit of nothing, and I only wrote it during the hour or so of the lesson, it's, you know, it's not too terrible, and I'm actually quite proud of little me's ability at characterisation, because, you know, let's never forget that Raphael is cool but crude. So allow me to share it with you, if you will. My story. One day I was walking down the road. I heard a rustling noise. Out of a bush jumped a teenager. He robbed all our money off us. There was another rustling noise. Out jumped the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtle. It was Raphael. I told him all about it, crying and hugging him. He ran after him. Very soon he got him. He realised it was Shredder, and when he caught his breath, he said, "You stupid Shredhead." He took him back to me. "There he is. Just one more thing." He took my ribbons and said, "I hope you don't mind." He wrapped him up and said, "There, all gift wrap for the police. But please come back with me to the sewers." "Yes, please," I said. Raphael was so happy when we got there. He said, "Would you like some cheese and tomato pizza?" "Yes, please," I said. At the end of the day, I crawled upon Raphael's knee and said good night, and I went to sleep. Next morning, I sneaked into my house and packed my clothes into a suitcase and set off to the sewers and called softly, "Raphael, are you here?" He came to me and said, "What's the suitcase for?" I answered, "I've come to live with you." When he heard that, he gave me a kiss. "I love you," he said.
This is Adam S. Leslie, co-host of this very podcast. My folk horror novel, Lost in the Garden, is now out and available in all good bookshops, including Blackwell's and Waterstones. Don't talk to strangers, don't play on the farm, and don't go to Almondby. Heather's on-off boyfriend Stephen has gone to the mysterious village of Almondby. He went for 2 weeks, and no one has seen him in 6 months. The only trace of him which remains is his voice, distantly calling for help, drifting across the fizz of shortwave radio. With a couple of friends in tow, Heather sets off through a warped, distended version of the English countryside, baking in perpetual summer, to track Stephen down, and to find out for herself why everyone says, "Don't go to Almondby." Author Eric LaRocca called Lost in the Garden eerily enchanting and profoundly inventive, a dreamy and unsettling masterwork. This is one of the freshest and most spiritually rewarding novels I've read in quite some time. And author Matt Wasilowski described it as like trying to recall a troubling and beautiful dream. It's like peering through a wound in the world, sorrowful and uncanny and utterly stunning. This book is magnificent, like nothing I've ever read before. Thank you, Matt and Eric. Lost in the Garden by Adam S. Leslie, published by Dead Ink Books, priced at $10.99. Look for the pink and white cover.